Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you people. I really can't. We do all this stuff for our family. We really do. For our own blood kin, you know, our wives and sons and daughters and grandkids. But we also do it for our extended family out there, too. And I'd just like to thank you for holding on. And, you know, the old bitter ender is here. He is really, he's the glue that holds this program together. We can always count it, no matter what happens. If we can just hang on to the third hour, the bitter ender will come on here to make it all right. And he will teach us this history, that one true history, man. We really will. So God bless you, bitter ender. I'm glad you're back in here, buddy. So,
thank you, Eddie. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Bitter ender is really bitter today. I'm going to tell our listeners about some of the crooked companies that we have in Tennessee, and I want them to think twice about doing business with something with some of these people. And I've got a list of them here. We're going to read them off here in a minute. But I don't know if you ever remember that John Boy and Billy show that was syndicated out in the mornings on the radio out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And they used to have this character, Mad Max, that they'd have on there. And he'd call in and said, and they'd always be going, "Well, Mad Max, how's it going?" He said, "How you think it's going? It's Mad Max. It ain't Miss Congeniality, Max." And he'd go off on a rant about the liberals are just tearing me up. Oh, I can't stand it. I'm so mad. Or Hillary Clinton or something like that. So I guess I'm playing the role of Mad Max today. What we're going to talk about, back in 1978, I believe it was, and I'll check the date on that to make sure. Oh, yeah, that was it, 1970. Well, before then, the Joseph E. Johnston SCV camp in Nashville committed an artist to do a painting of General Forrest, and then they sold the prints, and the money they raised from selling these prints went to Jane Baxendale. And she was a outstanding sculptress, or sculptress, however you want to say it, and did a bronze sculpture of Nathan Bedford Forrest, the bust. And it didn't cost the state of Tennessee anything. They gave it to the state of Tennessee to be placed in the state capitol, because they have busts in the capitol around different places in the state capitol in Nashville of famous Tennesseans, Davy Crockett, Andrew Jackson, even Andrew Johnson, and I think they had one of David Farragut, all across different places in the Capitol building there. And so they gave it to the state. Well, it wasn't there long until the offended hyphen Americans started whining and crying about it was so terrible to have that in there, and it just upset them so much when they were on their way to rob a convenience store or do a drive-by shooting or carjacking or, you know, their usual activities. And so they wanted it removed. And so they got these woke, sorry companies that had moved into Tennessee because of the low tax rate and the sweet deals they get from the state of Tennessee. And these rats that we've had several years in a row for governors make all these cushy deals with these corporations to get them come in here, and they brag about, oh, it's going to bring all these jobs to Tennessee, it's going to bring in so much money. Well, they'll never, I don't care how much money they bring in, they'll never make up for what the state gave them. And they move out of Detroit or out of California or New York or Pennsylvania or somewhere and move down here and get a great deal on setting up their corporation or their factory or whatever. Give an example. Saturn came in here from General Motors up in Detroit or wherever they are in Michigan, and they gave them land down there at Spring Hill, which is down south of Nashville. Not only that, the state of Tennessee had to cough up the money to build a parkway from Interstate 65 over to the Saturn plant in Spring Hill. And no telling how many millions that cost, because it's like a divided highway, and so they had to have all these trucks bringing in their supplies and then car haulers to take their Saturn cars out of there. And then they And they said, well, we're going to have all these jobs. It's going to create so many jobs. Well, the jobs came from Michigan. They brought their people from the plants up there, the GM plants up there, brought them down here, and they gave them all the high-paying tech jobs. Yes, Tennesseans got jobs, but they got jobs cleaning up the toilets and hauling the cardboard boxes out and cutting the grass and doing all that kind of stuff. The Tennesseans got the lowest-paying jobs on the scale. And, yes, they did create jobs, but they were the lowest-paying jobs they had at the Saturn plant. And I'll guarantee the rest of these companies that we're going to talk about in a few minutes have done exactly the same thing. They want the better weather, they want the low taxes, and they don't want any interference from labor unions, which we don't have. The unions aren't real powerful in the South, so that's why they bring all these big corporations down here. So anyway, that being said about the forest bust, these clowns or some woke character wrote this letter to the governor of Tennessee and had these corporations sign off on it. And I want to read you this piece of garbage that he came up with. It says, to the Honorable Bill Lee, which he is not honorable. This lying snake, when he was running for governor, one of the members from this Joe Johnston camp, SCV camp in Nashville, went to one of his fundraising dinners, sat right across the table from this lying snake, and ask him right to his stupid-looking face, all right, Governor Lee, or maybe Governor Lee, will you protect our Confederate monuments? Oh, yes, sir, yes, sir. I'm a conservative Republican. Oh, yes, sir. All right, and will you protect our Confederate bust of General Forrest, the Forrest bust, in the state capitol? Oh, yes, sir. When I get elected, I'm going to have it protected. Well, the lying dog got elected. And then he wasn't in office 6 weeks until he started pulling all kind of sneaky deals to get it taken out of the Capitol to pay off these corporations. And the deal was, what he did, he stacked the Capitol Commission. Now, the Capitol Commission decides what pictures and portraits and things like that go in the state capitol. So he stacked the Capitol Commission with a bunch of white-hating blacks, feral animals, and then put a bunch of liberal whites on there. So, of course, the Capitol Commission voted to remove the forest bust, which they did, and they couldn't appeal it to the state legislature because of the Heritage Protection Monuments Act, because they said, well, that didn't really qualify. That has to be out somewhere outside the Capitol. The Capitol is exempt. From the Heritage Monuments Protection Act that the Tennessee legislature passed, because it's under the Tennessee state government, and the Capitol Commission decides that. So surprise, surprise, these worthless black thugs and the liberal whites voted to get rid of the forest bust out of the state capitol, and they took it down to the state museum and stuck it back in a corner where, you know, it's dimly lit and out of the way. Oh, and they put it right next to a display of a Ku Klux Klan robe and Ku Klux Klan garb and stuff like that, implying that Forrest, you know, was, and they always claim that Forrest started the Klan or he was the Grand Wizard or something like that, which is a lie. But anyway, that's what they've done to us. This is how our state government treats us, the taxpayers and the Southerners that were born and raised here in Tennessee. They're pandering to all these foreign companies and not only foreign to this country, but around the different parts of this country to come in here. So here's a letter that these rotten companies sent to the governor. It says, Honorable Bill Lee, well, that's a joke right off the bat. We, the businesses listed below, wish to applaud you and the State Capitol Commission for taking an important first step towards the removal of the bust of Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest from the Tennessee State Capitol building.
My God.
This controversial bust was installed in the Capitol in 1978. And yeah, they had the dedication ceremony there to the state of Tennessee. A bunch of blacks showed up. They started pushing these women in the United Daughters of the Confederacy out of the way and threatening them. And one of the clowns had a hammer and hit the bust and put a big dent in it. So this is how they respect our history and our heritage. And so despite widespread objections, and it remains a pretty so small, it's hard to read, a symbol of oppression for many Tennesseans. Yeah, if you're living on welfare, and you don't have a job and you live in government housing, yeah, I guess it is oppressing. A statue of a man who was the first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. Well, that's a blatant lie. He was not. George Gordon was. So they can't even get the historical facts straight. First Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan should not be granted a place of honor in the state capitol. Now, we have to keep the state capitol for real criminals that steal from us, that lie to us and everything. Forrest was somebody of honor, and he shouldn't be in there. So we'll finish this up after the break, and we've got a couple other things. Mad Max wants to get off his mind today.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to hear all about it. Be right back, people.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR as hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
Tell you something, boy, if I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Yeah, Blood River Radio family. Without further ado, we're going to go right back to the bitter ender. And I'm anxious to hear this rant he's on, because it is enough to make your blood boil. But go ahead, bitter ender.
Well, okay. In the first segment, we were talking about these corporations that sent this letter to the governor of Tennessee, Bill Slick Willie Lee, to get him to remove the forest bust in the state capitol. They put an honest person in there, and these crooked legislators we have couldn't stand it, having a real man in there and a real honest person, so they wanted to get rid of it. Then they said, and we're reading this letter that they sent, as leading businesses and corporations in the state, we recognize our obligation to stand for equality and justice, not just for our employees, but for all Tennesseans. Yeah, thanks a lot. We really appreciate having a bunch of people from Michigan or California come in here and try to destroy our history. Thanks a lot. Yeah, we really appreciate having them coming. Honoring those who propagated racism and prejudice. And they kind of failed to mention all the blacks that Forrest employed after the war, when they were starving and had no employment, what he did for them. So they skipped over that part. This only serves to further divide our community and reinforce inequities in our society. And this is one of the stupidest things they come up with. I hear these black leaders that want our Confederate statues taken down all over Jacksonville, Montgomery, wherever, Tennessee. And they talk about, well, we have to take these statues down to bring our community together. How can you be that stupid? You don't bring people together by tearing down their history and their heritage. You divide people apart by doing stuff like that. And, you know, it's just the old thing. I have to give credit where credit is due, that these blacks have this innate ability of going out of their way to make people hate them. And this is a certain example of it. We strongly urge the Tennessee Historical Commission to vote for the prompt removal of the Forrest bust from the Tennessee State Capitol building and ask all Tennesseans, policymakers, to consider additional avenues to recognize wrongs against the black community and make racial justice a priority. So it doesn't matter what kind of prejudice you show to the white community, it's only prejudice against the black community that counts. So here are the clowns that signed on to that. AC Entertainment, Alliance Bernstein. Are we surprised about that name?
I don't think so.
An Irish name to me. Belmont University, another one of the crackpot schools we have in Nashville. This Belmont University, they had a kid elected student body president over there, and he's been on Dan Meredith's TV show, told about what they did to him. He came out and supported Trump, and the university turned against him, and he wanted to have the Pledge of Allegiance and, you know, some conservative speakers on the campus and talked about Trump. They turned against him. They threatened him, although he was elected now by the student body. The university turned on him, and he had to have police protection to move around the campus from class to class. There were so many threats against him.
Damn.
So that's what Belmont University is like. Let me see. What else we got? Oh, Belmont University, Blue Cross, Blue Shield of Tennessee, Bonnaroo Festival down there on I-24 near Manchester. And they usually have two or three people a year at the Bonnaroo Festival that die from drug overdoses. That's a good place. Bridgestone. Oh, yes, the Chaps. As in December 7th, 1941, Bridgestone is a Japanese tire company, auto parts and stuff. I tell you what, I refuse to pay money that insult to people that insult us. If all four of the tires on my truck went flat, I would limp down the road on the rims before I put Bridgestone tires on my truck.
Got
CMT,
right.
Country Music Television. Now, the next one we're going to talk about in a little more detail is Cracker Barrel. And after what they've come up with, I start calling it Crapper Barrel. Delta Dental, Your Boys in Memphis, FedEx, Genesco, the shoe company in Nashville, Google Fiber, HCA, Hospital Corporation of America, HCA Healthcare, Ingram Industries. Oh, boy, this is a good one. This old hag, Martha Ingram, was head of that, or inherited the company. I guess her husband made all the money. She paid Vanderbilt a ton of money to get rid of Confederate Memorial Hall. Now, Confederate Memorial Hall was built by the United Daughters of the Confederacy and Confederate veterans in the 1800s for young ladies to go to George Peabody College to study to be teachers. And what happened was, the room and board there was free, because so many of these young ladies were impoverished by what had happened after the war and in the South, that they put up the money for this dormitory for them to go to George Peabody College for teachers, and the room and board there was free. Well, Peabody College needed the money, so they sold their soul for 30 pieces of silver, or whatever the going rate was, and Vanderbilt University, which is right across 21st Avenue from Peabody, moved in and took it over. And the reason Vanderbilt took it over, Vanderbilt used to be a real high-class university, and they called it the Harvard of the South.
Sure,
but they needed a bunch of thugs and morons to boost up their athletic program. So they took over Peabody and started offering classes in physical education and exercise and stuff like that, something that their football and basketball players could actually pass. They couldn't pass the law or the engineering or the other courses at a real university like Vanderbilt was, so they had to take over Peabody. So when they did that, then they were all upset by this Confederate Memorial Hall, and this Martha Ingram and Ingram Industries ponied up with a bunch of money to have the name changed, and this big, huge engraved stone sign across the top of the balcony there, or the entrance hall, is about 30 feet long, said Confederate Memorial Hall. Well, of course, they got rid of that, got that out of there. So thanks a lot for the money on that one. Then let's see, what else we have here? Oh, yes, Ryman Auditorium and Ryman Entertainment. The Ryman was built in Nashville by Captain Tom Ryman, and that was the original home of the Grand Ole Opry, and it was also one of the only, late 1800s, that was one of the first, the largest meeting areas we had in Nashville. And the United Confederate Veterans were going to meet in Nashville, and they didn't have a building big enough to hold everybody that was coming to Nashville for the meeting. So the Confederate Veterans helped raise the money to put the balcony in the Ryman Auditorium. And so they put a sign on the front of it that said Confederate Gallery. They raised the money, so they had a sign on it. So if you were standing on the stage there at the Grand Ole Opry, where it was right after they moved it out of WSM Radio, and this is before they built the new Opry House out there at Gaylord Entertainment thing. But anyway, if you're standing on the stage at the Grand Ole Opry or different performers coming in there, and right almost just barely eye level with you out there on the balcony, it said Confederate Gallery. Well, they got rid of that. They are as woke as anybody else, so they had it taken down and put it way back in a museum. They have a Ryman artifacts. So anyway, thank you a lot. USB. Oh, here's another one. Let me see. Who else we got here? Vanderbilt University. They signed off on it. Vanderbilt University was a Confederate, a conservative university at one time. And it was Vanderbilt University where the professors and the students, the agrarians, came together to write that book, I'll Take My Stand, which was published in 1930. And it was written by, like I said, Vanderbilt professors and students. If you can believe that, Vanderbilt was. And it was started by former Confederate, Vanderbilt University was started by former Confederate officers. So they, that's what they did to get this university started, and now they've turned their back on anything Southern or Confederate. So Vanderbilt University voted for that, and in the 60s, it was the Vanderbilt Divinity School that set up all of these protests and marches and sit-ins at the lunch counters and at the dime stores and department stores in downtown Nashville. And the blacks went in there and just pushed the white women out. And no white woman, the white women were afraid to go downtown because blacks would put razors in the toe of their shoes and kick these women in the leg tried to go into one of these department stores. So the department stores downtown Nashville died. Nobody would go down there. So they had to move like Harvey's and Kane Sloan's and then the places like Woolworth's and all these department stores. They had to move out to the suburbs and get away from downtown Nashville. And Church Street in Nashville, which used to be a thriving business community, just basically died because of the blacks and their criminal activity. So Vanderbilt University, that's not surprising that they would do something like that. They were, that's where all the nutcase professors are now. And then we had Vanderbilt Medical Center. Now, my question is, what does medicine have to do with a bust of a Confederate general in the state capitol? But Vanderbilt University Medical jumped in there. And this is where I say, I'm not paying money to people that insult us. My primary care doctor used to be a Vanderbilt doctor. And once they did that, I said, well, screw them. I'm not paying them money anymore. So I switched and got a primary care doctor, and all of my medical procedures that I've had go on at St. Thomas Hospital now. Let's see. Volkswagen signed on this letter.
We got to go to a quick break.
Oh, I can't hear the music. Sorry.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from Town Hall, I'm Mary Rose. Republican strategist Aaron McGuire says DOJ is taking its time to make sure they get not only indictments and prosecutions, but successful convictions against government officials accused of engaging in lawfare against President Trump.
This is where it's perilous. We have to trust that the justice system, the Department of Justice under President Trump and Attorney General Pam Bondi are doing the work to the investigatory standards to be able to get not only indictments and prosecutions, but convictions.
McGuire says President Trump and many of his MAGA supporters need to be reassured that Bondi is moving ahead with her investigations despite the delays. She was interviewed by the Salem Radio Network. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee says additional federal law enforcement agents will focus on crime in Memphis starting this next week.
Memphis is a world-class city, and before us, we have a generational opportunity to make Memphis a safe city.
Courtesy of WATN-TV, 13 federal agencies will arrive in phases, including the National Guard. President Trump devoted a portion of his remarks at the UN this past week to severe green energy initiatives.
The primary effect of these brutal green energy policies has not been to help the environment, but to redistribute manufacturing and industrial activity from developed countries that follow the insane rules that are put down to polluting countries that break the rules and are making a fortune. They're making a fortune.
Stellantis has issued a recall of over 120,000 vehicles that can create a road hazard for other cars. The recall includes 2022 to 2024 Jeep Wagoneers and Jeep Grand Wagoneers. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Is war in the Middle East the revival of an ancient conflict recorded in the Bible?
The nation of Israel is a resurrected nation. So what if there was going to be a resurrection of another people, an enemy people of Israel?
Dinesh D'Souza's new film, The Dragon's Prophecy, is in theaters two nights only, October 6th and 8th.
We came back to a land that was largely barren and empty, and we brought it back to life, and we're going to keep it.
Tickets not sold in theaters. Get tickets only at thedragonsprophecyfilm.com.
Are you having trouble hearing? Hearing loss can devastate the quality of your life. Now, there's an affordable fix for you or your loved one. Rated the best hearing aids of 2025 by Forbes Health, Audion Hearing has the highest quality hearing aids at the lowest prices, starting at just $98 a pair.
I actually like them better than my old $5,000 hearing aids.
I could not believe how my hearing and life changed.
Join over 1 million happy customers by going to audionhearing.com. That's A-U-D-I-E-N hearing.com.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church, a congregation of God's covenant people. Informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
The smell of napalm in the morning. Smells like victory.
Some folks are born made. Here, Blood Grip Radio family. Without further ado, me and Gene talked about a few things and what's going on here at Memphrica and about how FedEx went to the damn dogs. But anyway, Gene mentioned that as one of these sellout companies here in Tennessee. But go ahead, Bitterinder. Continue on, brother.
Okay, well, that was the list of companies that signed on to this stupid letter they sent to Slick Willie Lee. But Cracker Barrel, that I now refer to as Crapper Barrel, posted a thing on their website with a picture of the Tennessee State Capitol and a big headline across the top, "What We've Done." Not only did they sign on to this letter, they put this junk in their website for Crapper Barrel. And it says, "Standing against racial injustice. We took a stand against racial injustice along with more than 30 other Tennessee companies by signing a letter to the Tennessee governor urging the bust of a controversial figure in Southern racial history be removed from the state capitol in 2020. Well, they got their wish. So we've had these flyers printed up. Well, I didn't have them, but somebody did, and they left a bunch of them with us at the Nathan Bedford Forest Home. And across the top of this flyer, it says, "Boycott Cracker Barrel for helping destroy our history." The image to the left on the Cracker Barrel DEI page, wonder what that is, they are proud of the fact that along with 29 other businesses signed a letter to Governor Lee urging to have him the forest bust removed. This was an attack on forest and Tennessee history. They spread the usual lies in their letter, which is below, and that's the letter we read. The Cracker Barrel, or Crapper Barrel, website is the only one known to boast about their participation in the bust removal. So we hand out these to people that take a tour of the forest home, and most of them want four or five more of our flyers to hand out to their buddies when they get back home, wherever that is in this country, or we've handed them out to people from the UK and Scotland and let's see, where else we've had, Canada. So we're trying to spread the information on Crapper Barrel to just boycott it and not even do business with these people that give us a shaft for our Southern history and Tennessee history. So anyway, that's one part of our program. Another thing I would like to talk about is a program that we had at our Sons of Confederate Veterans camp Thursday night. It's a gentleman by Scott Sally, and he's had a program there four or five times, and he is really a great history researcher. He goes into a lot of details, and of course he exposes all the lies and misinformation that we've been brainwashed with since we were in junior high school. And so his program last Thursday night was entitled "The Execution of Abraham Lincoln." And we put that in our newsletter that we send out for our members and anybody that wants to get the information from. And the SCV meetings, we have one a month, and we always have a guest speaker on different subjects. And so we send out a newsletter and tell them the time and location and everything. And then we list our speaker and their program that they're going to present. So we put Scott's name in there, "The Execution of Lincoln," and then the next line was, "And who says we don't have fun topics at the SCV meeting?" So anyway, but what the whole point of this was that Lincoln was executed and taken out by his own cabinet and people in the government that were wanted to get rid of him, to mainly to punish the South. And the leader of that was Edmund Stanton, the Secretary of War. And William Seward was also in the cabinet. Some of the other people in the Yankee Congress, Thaddeus Stevens of New York and Benjamin Wade of Ohio, these were the radical Republicans. And the Republican Party back then was the nutcase party, like the Democrats are today. And back in those days, the Democrats were the conservative party and the Republicans were the nutcase. They'd had AOC and Elizabeth Warren and Shifty Schiff from out in California and Gavin Newsom. They would all been Republicans back then. So they were afraid that Lincoln was going to let the southern states just come back into the Union after the war was over, and that's what he said. And after Richmond fell, Lincoln went to Richmond and met with one of the judges there in the courts in Virginia to try to talk about getting Virginia back into the Union. So the radical Republicans could not allow that to happen, because if they did, they knew that all the southern states were going to vote Democrat. So if you united the southern Democrats and the northern Democrats, and then they would gain seats in the House of Representatives, because now blacks had to be counted as a whole person. Before the war, in the original Constitution, blacks were not considered citizens, and the southern people at the Constitution Convention said, hey, they live here, why aren't they counted as whole people? The northern states were the ones that said, no, they're not citizens, you shouldn't count them as any. So the compromise was the three-fifths compromise, that blacks were counted as three-fifths of a person. And they talk about how terrible the South was. They wouldn't even count blacks as a whole person. They counted as only three-fifths of a person. No, stupid. They wanted as many people in the South as they could get, because the more people they had, the more representatives you had in the House of Representatives and Congress. And so now they were going to be counted as whole people. So that meant that southern states would have a lot more representatives in the U.S. Congress than they had before the war. So they had to do something about that. One thing they did, they passed the Franchise Act, which meant that Southerners who had participated in the Confederate Army, Navy, Marine Corps, the government, couldn't vote. And even if you aided the Confederacy and helped, you couldn't vote. So if somebody said, well, I seen old Eddie, he sold a bag of corn to Bedford Forest Cavalry when they come through here, then you couldn't vote. You were taken off the voting rolls, which meant you couldn't vote for sheriff, you couldn't vote for tax assessor, you couldn't vote for anybody to run the election. So the elections in the South for the next 40 or 50 years were just crooked as a barrel of snakes. So anyway, they wanted Lincoln out of there. They had a puppet person and Vice President Andrew Johnson, who was actually a Democrat, but he went along with most of everything that the radical Republicans wanted. And they were trying to figure out some way to get Lincoln out of there, and they hatched this plan to have him executed. And Scott went through all the details of Stanton, what a slimeball character he was before he ever got on Lincoln's cabinet, some of these army officers that they had, the protection that Lincoln was supposed to have, the guard that was supposed to be there at Ford's Theater that night when he was executed or shot. He was over in the bar next door drinking. John Booth had gone by there in the morning and cut a little V sort of a place in the wall where when he went up to the presidential booth, went up the steps to the presidential booth, he could take a board and put it into that wall and block the door so nobody could get up there. And, of course, Booth went there. He was an actor. He knew the play, Our American Cousin. He knew there was going to be a part that would get a big laugh from the audience, and that's when he decided to break into this presidential box and shoot Lincoln. Now, there were a lot of other circumstances that happened. The other guards and the people that, I mean, the war was going on, and there were soldiers all over Washington. It was still going on, but there weren't any around Ford's Theater. General Grant and his wife were asked by Lincoln to come to the play that night. Word got out that Grant was going to be there, and the place sold out because he was the war hero. He defeated the evil Confederates, and so everybody went there to see Grant, not necessarily Lincoln. So it was a sellout. And right at the last minute, though, Grant said that he had family business that came up, and he couldn't go to the theater that night.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of speculation of who told him, you don't want to be there tonight. There's something going to happen. You don't want to be there and be a part of this. And so he bailed out. There was an officer there with him, with Lincoln and his wife, but he was not there as a guard. He was there as a guest. So Booth waits, has a hole cut in the door, go into the presidential box. He can look through this spy hole, see where Lincoln is, that he's still there. And they get to the certain part in the play where there's a lot of laughter and applause. He comes through the door, pulls out a Derringer, and shoots Lincoln. So it's a one-shot Derringer. So, you know, if he was accosted by a guard, he didn't have a second shot to get the guard out of there. Well, he really didn't have to because there was no guard there on the presidential box. And the Union officer that was there with him tried to get him, and Booth supposedly slashed him with a knife. And he said this had this horrible wound, and he had a heavy wool overcoat on. It was an Army uniform. And there's no way that knife, that small knife, would have gone through that heavy wound and stabbed him up in the bicep and come all the way down to his wrist. That's what he claimed happened to him. So there were so many lies and questionable things that happened. So Booth, as we know, jumps over the balcony there and hits the stage, and one of his spurs got caught in the banister there, the decorations, and we'll pick it up after the break.
All right, can't wait to hear the rest of this. Be right back, people.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and, by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Get ready to be part of something incredible. We're breaking barriers and delivering the powerful stories that mainstream media won't touch. Your support is what fuels our mission to revolutionize journalism and bring you the truth. Join our passionate community of changemakers by donating at libertynewsradio.com today. Together, we're creating the future of news.
Blood River Radio family. It seems like we say this all the time, but the time just flies. So here we are in the last segment of the last hour of today's installment, the 27th of September. Our last show in September of 2025. But anyway, without I've been running my mouth further, we're going to go right back to the Bitter Ender, who has his professor of history hat on tonight. Go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Well, before the break, we were talking about this program that was presented to our Sons of Confederate Veterans Camp by Scott Sallie, entitled The Execution of Abraham Lincoln. And so John Booth was not acting just on his own. This thing was set up probably by Lincoln's Secretary of War, Stanton. And they wanted to get rid of Lincoln because he was going to let the southern states come back in, or he said he was. Now, Lincoln was the consummate politician. He could talk out of both sides of his mouth. When he was in the House of Representatives, he said states had every right to secede because New England was threatening to secede over Texas coming in. And he said any people anywhere have a right to throw off their existing form of government and form a new one that suits them better. That was Lincoln's quote as a representative from Illinois. Then when he became president, he said, no, you can't secede because it, even though it says you can in the Constitution, in the 10th, in the Bill of Rights, 10th Amendment, the Union was here before the Constitution. And we're going, whoa, whoa, wait a minute, the Union was formed from the Constitution. And so he said you couldn't secede, and if you tried it, we're going to send an army into your country and kill 280,000 of your men and probably another 5,000 to 10,000 civilians if you try to leave the Union. So I always thought, you know, America's such a great country because if you try to leave, they'll kill you, or the United States is what it is today because we were forced to be a part of it at the point of a gun. So what happened to this, you know, free democracy where you can vote what you think is the best route to take? Nope, you got to be in the United States at the point of a gun. So anyway, we're talking about the possibility that he was set up, Lincoln was set up by crooks and shifty kind of people and dishonest people who had shady backgrounds before the war to have him executed or shot, killed, getting out of the way, and put Johnson in there, and so they could just run over the Democratic Party, keep them out of power, and take over the government. So, like we said, Grant was, I don't know if he actually knew what was going to happen that night at Ford's Theater, but he was certainly told, don't go there, because, you know, that could be bad for your health. So Booth gets into the presidential box, he shoots Lincoln, he jumps over the balcony and caught a spur in that cloth, the red, white, and blue they had draped over the presidential box there, and fell in an awkward position on the stage and broke his leg. And, of course, his last words were, "Sic semper tyrannis," thus always the tyrants. And we've always called that Sic Semper Tyrannis Day, the day Lincoln got shot. But anyway, so he makes his escape. He's got a horse outside, gets on the horse. He knows to go to the bridge at the naval bridge in Washington. It's the only bridge in Washington that doesn't have guards on it. So who told the guards not to cover that bridge that night? And that was his escape route. And also by coincidence, the telegraph lines went dead right after Booth shot Lincoln. Wow. And one of the people, the officer that was in charge of the telegraph department, was a friend of Stanton's, and so Stanton probably gave him the word, shut down the telegraph lines so they can't send out messages that Lincoln has been shot and this man is escaping from Washington, and be on the lookout for this person. Telegraph lines went dead. So of course then they decided they've got to get Booth, and they send out search parties all over Maryland and into Virginia, and some people said they thought they saw him in Virginia, and they tracked him down to this barn, and they were supposed to take him alive. And what was that boy's name? Payne, that was one of his accomplices. They did take him alive. Dr. Mudd, who set his leg, his broken leg, and then this crazy guy that was in the U.S. Army was a religious fanatic, and he went berserk that night. They set fire to that barn to get Booth to come out. He pulls a board out of the way and sticks a rifle in there and shoots Booth and kills him. So if they wanted to get Booth alive and find out who else was involved in it, why did they kill him? And supposedly he had a diary that they searched him and found. The diary was turned over to Stanton, the Secretary of War. He never mentioned it, that he had Booth's diary. And it didn't come to light until quite a few years later. And when they went to read through the diary, 18 written pages, back and, you know, front and back of 9 pages, 18 written pages were ripped out of that diary. And they've disappeared, and nobody ever knows what's happened to them. They were probably burned. But one would kind of think that those 18 pages would implicate Stanton and some of the other people in the Washington government in this execution of Lincoln. So, you know, the whole thing looks like a set-up deal, kind of like the Kennedy assassination.
Yes.
So Oswald shoots Kennedy, and then Ruby shoots Oswald, and you've had the people involved of it just wiped out. And then we go down to this Booth shoots Lincoln, and then the crazy guy shoots Booth, this soldier, and the diary that Booth had suddenly has 9 pages or 18 written pages of it, front and back, disappear. So, you know, the whole thing looked like a setup. Now, of course, the conspirators, the other conspirators that they captured, were given a Soviet show trial, and this trial was a joke. It was civilians tried in a military court, which is against the Constitution. They were not allowed to cross-examine witnesses. Witnesses were paid to testify against them, and the whole thing was just a set-up deal to get rid of these people so they couldn't say, well, Stanton or some of the other people in the government told us to go after Johnson and Seward and some of the other people in Lincoln's cabinet. So they were surprised, of course, found guilty, and executed there in November of 1865 in the old Capitol prison. And one of the people they executed was Mary Surratt, and she had the boarding house where they supposedly met and planned all of this out. She was the first woman that was executed by the United States government, and after the Salem witch trials, of course, but then after the United States government came along, she was the first woman that was executed by the U.S. government. So they got rid of all the possible people that could expose what the army officials and the Lincoln's cabinet were doing to try to get him taken out. And they even tried to implicate Confederate President Jefferson Davis in this. After Davis was captured down in Georgia, they took him and chained him in the dungeon in Fort Monroe, down there on the Chesapeake Bay, the tip of Virginia there. And they had a light on all the time on his cell, a candle, so it wasn't dark, hard to sleep. They had a guard tramping up and down, making a lot of racket so he couldn't sleep. And they were trying to figure out some way to try him and execute him for being leading this war against the United States. And the Supreme Court justice told him, it said, I think it was Justice Taney, said, you do not want to put him on trial because you cannot prove that secession was illegal. So what you would say then, you fought this war for 4 years that cost over 700,000 lives, and you fought an illegal war. So what they did, they had taken the commandant of the Confederate prisoner of war camp down at Andersonville, Georgia, and Major Henry Wirtz, and they hauled him off to D.C. to try him as a war criminal because of the conditions at Andersonville. And the reason the conditions were so bad, Lincoln stopped the prisoner exchange, and a facility that was built for 3,000 had over 10,000 there, and they ran out of food, they ran out of medicine. They even offered to let the federal soldiers from over in Jacksonville, Florida, they captured, bring food and medical supplies over to the prison to take care of their people and send the sanitary commission with them, the forerunner of the Red Cross, so they can tell you that your people get the food, get the medicine, and we don't take it. Lincoln turned them down because he wanted the South to starve, and he figured any food they sent to that prison was not going to go to Southerners. So they had Wirtz there. Of course, he was found guilty, another one of these Soviet show trials. The night before he was to be executed, they went to him and said, all right, if you'll implicate Jefferson Davis and say that he told you to torture these prisoners and make life miserable for them, and how many of them died, it was Davis's fault, we will give you a pardon. We will not execute you. And then Wirtz told him, well, then I'm a dead man, because he would not turn on Jefferson Davis and lie about him to save his own life, because he knew if he lied about Jefferson Davis that it was Davis's orders, they would kill him too. So it's kind of like Sam Davis, the Coleman scout in Tennessee. They murdered him because he wouldn't turn in his commanding officer. So, hope we got some information out to our folks, and we'll be ready to go with another interesting eye-opener next week.
Well, you did a great job, Bitterender. You really did. And I know our listeners appreciate it as much as I do. I really did. But God bless you, Gene. Just like Frank Hoyt says up north, he says that the Bitter Ender is a national treasure. And he told this just like it is. Well, thanks again, Gene. And thanks again, Jay and Miss Lizzie. And thank you, Blood Group Radio family, for tuning in. And God willing, next week, that'll be the first week of October that we'll be broadcasting. This is the last broadcast of September. So anyway, we'll see you next week, folks. God bless you. Good night.